Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG, whenever we feel like it, Ethan, Nick, and Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick and Nick Zoraris. Follow Blog at Gotham SN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. As you can probably hear, my voice is back. Shout out Antibiotics. All right. Post-draft recap. Giants Twitter has lost the plot yet again for probably the 10th straight season. And we're back to talk about all of it. Joe Shane, according to Twitter, is on the hot seat. Brian Daboll, according to Twitter, is on the hot seat.
According to Twitter.
And here we go. I don't even know where to begin. I feel like Oscar from The Office. Apoplectic. Apoplexy is what I'm feeling right now. Because I truly, truly, truly do not understand where all of this, I don't even want to call it hate, is coming from. I find it very, very misguided.
You don't?
And we're here to talk about it. You think I do what?
I think you do know where it's coming from.
I really don't, to be honest.
We talked about it a little bit yesterday. A lot of people are upset about this because they didn't do what the Giants didn't do what they wanted them to do.
Oh, sure. So I think it's a combination of the Giants not doing what they wanted them to do and also a combination of them just being emotional and frustrated. I feel like KD, look at you, emotional. Why don't you, don't worry about what goes on at the top of things. But we're here. So where do we want to start? Should we start on a more peaceful note and discuss rounds 2 and 3 of the draft? Or should we just dive right into the latest?
Inverted pyramid. Most important thing first, my friend. Most important, most topical news first. What's most pressing in your mind? You have thoughts, Ethan.
Giants Twitter.
Yes, go. Okay,
go for it.
Okay.
Go.
I don't understand how we got here. I am a fan of Joe Shane. I'm a fan of Brian Daboll. I think a very good litmus test for their acumen and ability would be if the Giants were to fire them, Shane would get scooped up immediately. Daboll would get scooped up immediately. Brandon Brown's already getting interviews. Mike Kafka's already taken interviews. They're not perfect. No coach, no GM in this league is perfect. They all have their hits. They all have their misses. What separates the good GMs from the bad GMs is, one, the ability to pick a process and stick to it, and two, the ability to quickly acknowledge your mistakes and move on from them. Neither of those two things were things that the previous administration did, his despicable predecessor. I went back looking at a lot of the tweets from all these people that are complaining about Joe Shane. They're upset that he didn't go draft a quarterback, even though he tried for months. They're upset that he gave Daniel Jones the contract. They're upset about that he didn't trade Saquon. He didn't trade McKinney. This, that, and the other thing. Every single one of those people had tweets from 2022 and even into 2023 talking about how this was a process and that this is going to take time because of the mess that the previous administration left for Joe Shane. Jerry Reese doubled down and tripled down on his mistakes, and it's why the roster got into a very, very bad spot between reaching for need and picking players that didn't fit the current system, the current, I guess, timeline of where the team was, and doling out bad contract after bad contract. Joe Shane's despicable predecessor came in and instead of fixing it, made it 15 times worse. Everyone acknowledged that it was going to take time to dig out of this mess. Now, when we podcasted year one and even during year two, we said, listen, this is probably going to be a 3-year process. I think there were even points where I said that this was going to be a 4-year process because they didn't have a quarterback. They didn't have anyone on the offensive line besides Andrew Thomas. They didn't have anyone on the defensive line besides Dexter Lawrence. They didn't have a competent linebacker. Their secondary was in disarray. Hard decisions had to be made. I mean, James Bradbury had to be fucking cut last year, and he would have been their best cornerback last year. Like, this was a mess. It is in the process of being fixed. The acknowledgement of previous regime mistakes and the acknowledgement of current regime mistakes, a la the Daniel Jones contract, is what separates good GMs from bad GMs. And we got people on here talking about, well, his drafts have been underwhelming. Really? You thought Deontay Banks drafted at what, 25th overall, was going to come in day one and be a fucking shutdown corner? We're judging Kayvon Thibodeau's tenure as defensive end for the Giants after two seasons and now going into a new defensive coordinator. Like, been harsh on Evan Neal. Carmine Brasillo's here. We're not going to give him half a season to see if he can turn Evan Neal into a competent guard or a competent tackle. Like, outside of the Daniel Jones contract, Joe Shane has been remarkably fiscally responsible. Year
and
one,
don't get me wrong, that's a huge fuck up. The Jones contract is a huge fuck up. But massive. They've acknowledged it. They're not being stupid about it.
And he even hedged his bet in real time. Yeah. I would say it's not a stretch to say that he was taken to the cleaners I don't know what fucking word I'm looking for because I'm so angry right now, but he lost the negotiations to Daniel Jones' agents, but he hedged in real time and gave himself the out after year two and tried to move on this year. Correct me if I'm wrong here, he could designate him a post June 1st cut and just make Drew Lock the starter. And he's moved on from the mistake after 1 year. So year one, we're talking about a guy who literally could not do anything, could not spend in free agency because of the mess that he inherited. In year two, we're talking about a guy who brought in Bobby Okereke, pronunciation, don't know, don't care, drafted Micah McFadden. We're talking about draft bust. That's a very good 1-2 linebacker duo. On the defensive line, re-signed Dexter Lawrence to what is now considered a very, very good deal considering where the market's at, drafted Kayvon Thibodeau, traded and extended for a 26-year-old alpha pass rusher in Brian Burns. Don't know what they're going to do for the other defensive tackle spot, but they either obviously feel confident in filling that need through camp cuts or with guys like Jordan Riley or Nacho or who they already have on the roster. And on the offensive line this year, spent very prudently on three at market or below market contracts for offensive line / offensive guard, a guy who can play both, John Runyon, and I'm already forgetting the fucking third guy. But again, like, prudent spending that does not harm the Giants mid to long term financially. They're going to move on from Daniel Jones. And for the people who were worried that Joe Shane's on the hot seat or Brian Daboll's on the hot seat, you know what would have put them on the hot seat or would have acknowledged that management had them on the hot seat? If they had reached for JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, or Michael Penix, because that would have been a panic move to try to save themselves, try to extend their tenure, but they didn't do that. The fact that they tried to get Ross, they wound up with Drew Lock, they passed on guys who I agree on passing on, right? I've put my flag in the sand there. Like, if you're mad that they passed on Bo Nix, just admit that you didn't watch any college football. If you thought that a GM who, you know, has a quarterback on the roster with two neck injuries and a torn ACL is going to stake his future on a guy with two torn ACLs and shoulder surgery, okay, think again. And if you think that JJ McCarthy, whatever your opinion on JJ McCarthy is, we spoke about this on the podcast we did a few days ago. You can project however you want. I think this guy stinks. There are people out there that think this guy's going to be good. The fact of the matter is, if you're asked to throw three total times in the fourth quarter throughout the college season, obviously I'm being facetious here, but the fact when you are not asked to do something in volume, it makes that projection harder. So for them to risk their jobs and their tenure on a guy that they're not confident in, I am totally fine with them passing on that quarterback. But to me, passing on that quarterback leads me to believe that they have at least this year and next year to figure out the quarterback situation. And barring them murdering someone on Giants property, they're fine. Unless Brian Daboll fist fights a coach on the sideline, both of these guys will be here next year. I do not understand. Oh, well, you know, coaches don't. But how many GMs have we seen fuck up the quarterback position and get a second chance? It happens all the time. And in much worse situations than what the Giants got themselves into with the Daniel Jones contract, where they can move on after this year. So, again, I don't get it. I think that he has shown good process, whether or not you agree or whether or not you're going to be patient enough to let some of these draft picks pan out and let the coaching staff do their thing. Both of these guys will be here. I am willing to let both of them see out their tenure and at least try to fix the quarterback situation. We're talking about a guy who came in here with what everyone acknowledges, two guys that came in here with what everyone acknowledges as a dog shit roster, made the playoffs and won a playoff game in year one, and then won six games with a deli owner and Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. And you think these guys are on the hot seat? That is insane to me. In no world are these guys on the hot seat right now. If they were, we'd be having a much different conversation about the quarterback situation. So again, it's absolutely insane to me that we're even having these conversations. And this is coming from someone who historically has been very reactionary. I'm very much willing to sit and wait it out, see what these guys do, and let their draft picks develop. Like, we're talking about two drafts, right? Like, these draft picks that he just picked, no one really knows what to expect year one. Although, by the draft consensus, pretty much every single draft pick, like the guys that do this stuff for a living, are huge fans of the second and third round picks. And I'm willing to let Kayvon develop. I'm willing to let Carmine Brasillo get his hands on Evan Neal. Like, I'm willing to let Deontay Banks have another season before I fucking say whether or not he sucks. Like, I what are we doing here? Like, this is the best GM head coach combo we've had in over a decade. Maybe multiple decades. And we're ready to run them out of town because it's year three and the team's going to suck and they haven't figured out a quarterback. Like, that's clearly the number one priority for them. They wouldn't have tried to sign Russ. They wouldn't have tried for weeks to trade up for Drake May. Like, that's clearly priority number one. I don't understand how some people aren't seeing that. So that's it. I've been yelling and screaming. You guys can fucking go. Sick of this shit.
Listen, I think you're absolutely right. I think the one thing I'll say is that, look, there's a lot of people right now who are upset at the fact that the Giants, A, didn't draft the quarterback, and B, didn't draft the quarterback that they wanted. And I think because of that, they're acting a little bit irrational. But I will say, I think there's a middle ground here between where you are, Ethan, and where they are. And I think that middle ground is like, you know, you see the process and you agree with the process. But yeah, I mean, you do want to start seeing some results. Now, that results doesn't mean that this team needs to, you know, there needs to be a playoff mandate or something like that. But you want to start seeing some development. Does that mean people need to be on the hot seat? No. But I think it's fair as a fan to sit there and say, okay, we're going into year three with a lot of these guys. Year two with a lot of these guys that you brought in, let's start seeing the results. I think the Bobby Okereke signing is really underrated amongst the fan base. I think he has come in and been a really good linebacker. He was one of the best linebackers in the league last year. I think him and Micah McFadden made a good duo. And I think that this offseason they made a concerted effort to add great players. And it's not easy to add great players. And the trade for Brian Burns and then drafting Malik Nabers, you know, I think they added to an elite prospect and an elite player. And I think that's very important as they try to build this roster out, because that was something this team was lacking. So if you're upset about the quarterback position, it's fair to be upset. And I think that there does need to be this conversation about the process that went into paying Daniel Jones. And I think, yeah, obviously Joe Shane shoulders the blame. And, you know, I understand, Ethan, you're like, you can get out of it a year two, but
Yeah, you get out of year two, but you also pay the guy over $80 million over 2 years. And then there's also like a $22 million dead cap hit that they're going to eat if they release him after the second year. So you got to take that all into consideration. But I think ultimately this goes, it's pretty simple. People are upset that the Giants didn't draft the quarterback that they wanted. And because of that, they're coming out here with these irrational things. Like, for example, we like to go back to the trade deadline. And why did you not trade Saquon Barkley? And why did you not trade Xavier McKinney? I just think that's irrational. Number one, for Saquon Barkley, the ownership was not going to allow Saquon to be traded for a day three pick. And that's what his value was. He was an aging running back in the final year of his deal. And a team that was acquiring him had to be willing to pay him the remaining, I believe, $5, $6 million in salary. That's a lot more than what teams are willing to pay a running back for an entire year. So unless it was some extreme offer, the ownership was just not going to do it. Ownership did not want to sit there and see their offense just continue to be dog shit while their best offensive player at the time, and again, you don't have to agree with this, go somewhere and help another team, whoever that team might be, you know, win a Super Bowl or make the playoffs. They were just not going to do that. They couldn't stomach that. They'd rather just play it out than get that extra day three pick.
As for and that's wrong. We're not saying that that's right.
Right. But that's what ownership, that's their mindset. As for Xavier McKinney, and I went back and looked at this and I researched this, and I looked back in recent memory of safeties that were traded, right? Now let's understand something about Xavier McKinney before I go through this list. Number one, Xavier McKinney is a 24-year-old safety that some people think is ascending. He's a good safety. I think he's a really good safety.
He's not great.
Yeah, he's not great. He's a really good safety. So in 2022, before the season started, the Eagles acquired C.J. Gardner-Johnson, good safety. Is he as good as Xavier McKinney? I don't know. But again, they acquired him from the Saints for a fifth and a sixth round pick. And the Eagles also got a seventh round pick back. So essentially they got him for a fifth and then a pick swap between six and seven. Chuck Clark was traded from the Ravens to the Jets for a 2024 seventh round pick. Quandre Diggs, who's now a three-time Pro Bowler, was traded from the Lions to the Seahawks for a 2021 seventh and for a 2020 fifth round pick. I went back to 2018. Haha, Clinton Dix, who was a good player at the time, was dealt from Green Bay to Washington for a 2019 fourth round pick. So let's go back to Xavier McKinney. While he was on a rookie contract, it was the last year of his rookie deal. So any team that was willing to trade for Xavier McKinney, for them to give serious draft capital, they would have needed to be willing to pay him, right? Was there a team out there that would be willing to deal? Because I just went down the list. One player got dealt for anything better than a fourth round pick, and that was Haha Clinton Dix in 2018. And that wasn't at the trade deadline either. So you really have to look at history and look at, okay, what can we compare this to? To just assume that a team was going to be willing to trade a third round pick for McKinney and the Giants left it on the table, I think that's asinine. Now, again, whether you agree with the Saquon thing or not, ownership was not going to sign up for it. And even if ownership was to sign up for it, the return was going to be marginal. It was not going to be something that Giants fans was going to make or break them in terms of getting a quarterback. Now, impacting the game. Ethan, you said this, and I couldn't agree more. They lost games with Saquon Barkley. They lost games without Saquon Barkley. His impact on the actual results on games was not going to, there was no impact. So him being
Weiss, there, if you had a Giants Eagles and the line is Eagles minus 10 and Saquon Barkley gets announced that he's out, guess what the line moves to? Minus 10.
Yeah.
It doesn't move. Same thing for Xavier McKinney. And even in the Packers game, which the Giants won by what, 2 points? Where Saquon had two touchdowns, both of these touchdowns were inside 5 yards.
Yes.
Like, no other way for them to score. No other running back can get those yards.
And Ethan, they made a really good trade. They traded Leonard Williams for a second round pick.
Correct.
They traded, they got back more for Leonard Williams than what Dave Gettleman gave up.
Right.
Think about that. And the final year of his deal. So this notion that they were delusional in the state of the roster at the trade deadline and still thought they could make a run, it's simply not true. They made a trade at the deadline. If with the McKinney and the Saquon stuff, it's again, this is all just revisionist history by a group of fans that are really, really, really upset that the Giants didn't draft a quarterback that they liked. Now, regardless what you feel about McCarthy, I would not have been okay. I would not personally use the sixth pick on JJ McCarthy, and the Giants agreed, right?
Apparently many other GMs agreed also.
Right. Here is the thing. And I told you guys this too, and I wanted to save it for the pod, but I just couldn't. I had to share with you. If the Giants, so I went, I talked to a friend who knows a guy who might know a guy, right? Ethan, that old thing that you and I did. If Malik Nabers had gone fifth to the Chargers and the Giants were sitting there at six, there were two guys that they would have considered, which is Notre Dame tackle Joe Alt and Washington receiver Roma Dunze. Their first preference would have been, they had two offers on the table, one for a team that was picking in the top 10 and one for a team that was picking outside the top 10. I don't know which the teams are, but people can play the guessing game and try to connect the dots however they feel. Their goal was, hey, if we can get back and stay in the top 10 and get a couple more picks or get a pick, we could potentially then still get Roma Dunze. If we go outside the top 10, obviously that eliminates us from getting one of the three big receivers, but we could then potentially add a really good corner, which we did last year. But their first preference was, let's move back, stay in the top 10, still be able to land a Dunze. At no point were they considering taking JJ McCarthy at six or moving back and taking JJ McCarthy at nine or 10.
They probably viewed him as a late first, early second.
They did a lot of work on him because that was the guy they had the most questions on. And they wanted to make sure, typically the guy you do the most work on, it's typically the guy you have the most questions about. They did a lot of work on JJ McCarthy. They had the private workout. They went to Ann Arbor. They brought him in for a visit. There was a lot of stuff done because they wanted to make sure they believed that they would be in position to draft JJ McCarthy as they were. And they wanted to make sure they were not passing up on a franchise quarterback. Doing all the work that they did brought them to the conclusion that they could not take him at six. They could not trade up for him. And again, he was not in their car. They had three guys. And then the last thing I'll say about this, about the quarterback thing.
Well, the three guys being Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Malik Nabers.
No. They had three quarterbacks, I'm saying. They would have taken. And those three guys were 1 and 3. And the last thing I'm going to say, and then we can talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. It takes a lot of luck to land a franchise quarterback, right? It's not, you know, obviously you need skill. You got to be able to scout these guys. It's not an easy thing to do.
You think the Chicago Bears thought they were going to be drafting Caleb Williams when they made that DJ Moore trade?
Exactly. In any other draft year, when you look at the draft order, the Giants are probably able to get to one or two or three. Unfortunately, this year, the team that was picking one wanted their guy, was not going to move out for Caleb Williams. The Washington Commanders were not moving out, and even if they were moving out, they were not making a deal with the New York Giants. Was not happening. Sorry. There is a division rival tax that was probably going to be included that the Giants were just not going to be willing to pay. Probably couldn't pay. And number three, the New England Patriots. While they were, I believe, I know some of the stuff that's come out about, they weren't that, they were serious about moving out. The problem is it's an unorthodox situation in New England with the ownership's mandating of a quarterback. Again, when people say, oh, you can trade up for your quarterback, you can't. This draft taught us that. Oh, you can trade back into the first round or get a guy in the second round. This draft taught us you can't, right? Teams view quarterbacks differently. The Giants were unlucky. But that doesn't mean they didn't try. They tried like hell. Up until about 1 o'clock on Thursday, I thought they were going to get to three. I really did. I thought they were going to get to three.
Me as well.
But they didn't do it. And the last thing I want, and this is the absolute last thing I'm saying about this, the last thing I want for my head coach and my general manager is to draft like their jobs are on the line. Take a quarterback because you want to extend your tenure for 1 year. That's just a horrible mindset to have. It doesn't make any sense to me why any fan threw that around. Hey, Joe Shane needs to draft the quarterback or else he's going to be on the hot seat. What does that have to do with the quarterback that you're drafting? They didn't draft a quarterback. It is what it is. They know the situation with Daniel Jones. I do not believe he's the set in stone starter for week one. I think there's a lot of moving parts here. I think the contract is...
I mean, John Schneider just came out again and stated that he thinks that it's going to be a legitimate competition and that Drew Lock has a chance to start.
And I am 100% with him.
Yeah.
This dude has a neck injury. At any point, if he re-injures the neck, that out immediately goes out the window in terms of cap saving. I believe the Giants are done with Daniel Jones.
Shock me if he's a post June 1st cut.
That would surprise me a little bit. But again,
I think they'd rather bring in another veteran.
I would be with you on that, Ethan, if they drafted a quarterback in like the fourth or fifth round.
No, because that person, like,
they take
Spencer Rattler, and then what? Like, you're choosing between Tommy DeVito and Spencer Rattler in week 4 or 5, barring an injury. I think they bring in another veteran if they decide to move on from Dan Jones post June 1st. They cut him. They're going to have Drew Lock as the starter, but I think that everyone acknowledges that Tommy DeVito cannot see regular game time, and they'll see who the camp cuts are. They'll see which veterans are out there, and they'll bring in whoever, because again, like this barring absolute catastrophe, again, this team is not going to be picking 4th, 5th, 6th, whatever it is. Like, will they make the playoffs? I don't know. But like, I think 7 or 8 wins should be probably the expectation. And that's not going to happen if Tommy DeVito is starting regularly again.
Yeah. So I guess that's the absolute last thing I'm going to say. They tried. It didn't work. Like I said, there's luck involved in this. Unfortunately, they were absolutely unlucky when you look at 1, 2, and 3. Great draft class for quarterbacks. But again, it is what it is. Nick, what do you got?
All right, building off of that, there are things I like that both of you said I want to expand on. Number one, I understand why people are upset. I do. I can genuinely understand how you get to the position where you feel like the Giants aren't making progress. I can understand why you're there and why you feel that way. But at the same time, you also need to accept you can't make things happen if they're not there. Like you just said, if there was an opportunity to go up and get somebody, they would have done it. I have no reservations about that. From what we've heard, you know, the Giants are ready to trade their one next year and multiple mid-round picks this year, next year, to facilitate going up to 3 to get Drake May. Building off of that, if you still trust Brian Daboll as a coach and Joe Shane as a talent evaluator, then you shouldn't mind giving them the opportunity to continue to mold the team in the direction you're going in. If you have reservations about Daboll, about Shane, okay, I can understand why you're concerned. Next, on McCarthy. I think there's a decent chance McCarthy is decent right out of the gate with the Vikings, because that's a landing spot that's in a lot better position.
It's perfect, dude. I might try to draft him in Dynasty. Like, he's got Justin Jefferson.
Like, Jordan Addison, the two bookend tackles.
Great coaching staff.
Hawkinson.
The
play action offense.
Yeah.
That's not a situation that's similar to what the Giants have. We talked about this on the episode we recorded last week. If the Giants draft J.J. McCarthy and he starts week one, he is throwing to Darius Slayton, Wandale Robinson, Theo Johnson. Great. That offense is not going to be particularly dynamic. The knock and
that's how you tank for a quarterback.
The excuse everybody is given Daniel Jones for the truthers that are still out there is the supporting cast hasn't been good. Okay, we're all in agreement. The supporting cast for Daniel Jones has not been good enough. So your solution to that problem is to draft a quarterback 6th overall who threw the ball 15 to 20 times per game behind the best offensive line in college football, with a three-headed monster of a running back trio that ball
and the best defense in the country,
and one of the best defenses in the country, that ball controlled their way to a national title. That's not to take away, he had a decent season, but he was never put in a position where he had to make impactful plays for extended periods of time. He was not asked to be the guy. If you go watch Drake May, you go watch Caleb Williams, you go watch Jaden Daniels, all three of those guys had to be their offense. Caleb's offensive line at USC was fucking horrendous. He developed really bad habits trying to play hero ball all the time. Same thing Drake May did, but he had to do it because there was no other way. I think JJ McCarthy is probably going to have really solid numbers in Minnesota because that offense is really conducive to quarterback success. You saw the season Kirk Cousins was having up until he tore his Achilles. He was on pace for 5,800 yards and 45 touchdowns. I have no qualms about saying I think McCarthy can easily hit 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns in that offense, doing the shenanigans, the underneath, the play action, the bullshit that we've come to know and love from the Shanahan-McVay tree of offenses. The Giants are not running that type of offense. The Giants tried to do the shenanigans underneath stuff with Daniel Jones for two straight years. Remember what happened 2 years ago about week 10 when the Giants really ran all of those bootlegs and that underneath stuff? The defenses stopped respecting the Giants' ability to throw the ball deep. They crashed the line of scrimmage harder and there was no room underneath. If you're throwing 3 yards of completion, there is no room for your offense to operate. And you are going to end up in those third and mediums that are going to get your quarterback killed. I think there's a world where the Giants could have found a way to make JJ McCarthy work hypothetically, but it's not this one. The roster is not set up for a guy who needs training wheels. I think that's the biggest issue the Giants have right now, is they are still turning over this roster. If Evan Neal plays better, and then we've got the two bookend tackles, and they've put draft capital into a center, and they've signed Runyon, and they've signed Lenore, then okay, maybe we're talking about maybe they could have taken McCarthy and they missed an opportunity. But being that this roster is still kind of meh and they need to fill out a lot more spots, you know, we talked about this a lot last year, Weiss, the idea that the Giants have three blue chippers, you know, other than Banks, other than Thibodeau and Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas, three, four guys. Other than those four guys, there's not a lot of foundational pieces that are like immovable. You could put Okereke in there now because of the season he had last year, but this roster is not really solidified. You know, we're talking, who's going to be wide receiver two next year? Who's going to be tight end one next year? Who's going to be running back one next year? Who's going to be, is Neal playing right tackle? Is he playing right guard? All of that uncertainty would have made JJ McCarthy's life in this offense a lot more difficult. I don't think.
So we think. Like, again, like and I agree with you 100% on everything that you're saying. What it boils down to is your roster building philosophy. There are plenty of teams who have had success drafting a quarterback and then building the roster around them. And that quarterback coming in being so good that he masks a lot of those deficiencies. There are also situations where the roster gets built up and then you bring in the quarterback and you make their life way, way easier. I do not feel comfortable drafting JJ McCarthy into a situation where he's got to be the hero, because like you said, he was not asked to do that in college. That is a very, very risky projection that I do not feel comfortable making.
And building off of that, you just inspired me another thought. Something I brought up on the show we did last week was the idea that if you draft that type of guy where you don't ask them to do everything, you have a defined ceiling because you need to make the rest of your roster perfect. If you want to be the Rams with Goff or the 49ers with Garoppolo, you know, you can be competitive, but you're probably not going to win a Super Bowl. Look at the 49ers. The Giants are a long way away from the 49ers. If the 49ers had a quarterback that was, you know, 15, 20% better than Brock Purdy, Jimmy Garoppolo, they probably have three of the last five Super Bowls. The margins at the top of that position are very, very small. You need a guy that can make a play when the chips are down. And that sounds cliche, and it's typically the type of analysis I avoid, but you need a quarterback who's dynamic and can make plays outside of structure. I don't know if JJ McCarthy can do that. I know Bo Nix can't do that. I'm pretty sure Michael Penix can't do that at this level. Those guys, I can see them all having pretty solid NFL careers where they're in that middle class, where they're from 15 to 23, you know, the Garoppolo, Derek Carr, where if they're your quarterback and the rest of the team is good, you can have a good team. But I don't think any of those guys is a bona fide elevate the ceiling of your team the way the first three picks were. And I think that's where Giants fans have to accept. We're going to have to do this the hard way. The Giants are trying to make the best of a bad situation. Getting a quarterback is the hardest thing to do in this sport. There are 32 teams. There are maybe 11 or 12 actively good quarterbacks. Once you get down from 12 to 20, then we're talking about, okay, do we have a scheme that's going to give them an opportunity? Do we have complementary talent that's going to make them better? Do we have the coach that's going to be able to bring more out of them? And then once you get past 20, we're talking about the game managers, don't kill us, and then the projects, the toolsy guys. The Giants right now are at a point where, is there that much of a difference from going from what Daniel Jones is right now to what J.J. McCarthy would be in this offense? It's not a big enough discernible difference that you would stake your job on it, which is what would have happened if Shane took McCarthy, because as you said, that's his second quarterback. You know, he put chips in on Jones. If they draft McCarthy, okay, you have 2 to 3 years to make this work with him, or you're definitely getting fired. Now, maybe you have 2 or 3 years and maybe you're getting fired.
Yeah. You guys have said everything that needs to be said.
Preach. And I would also be I'd be remiss not to add to the end of Nick's analysis that had they gone my preferred route of franchising Daniel Jones, they still are in the same exact situation minus the dead money.
We should have traded for
Lamar. They don't have a quarterback.
We should have traded for Lamar.
That's also
that was a fun 10 minutes, Ethan, where you and I were both like, they're not going to tag Jones. We could do they're not going to tag Barkley. Yeah, we could trade for Dan Jones.
The Giants and the rest of the league. I mean, that was just the largest
exactly
scale
was at the time.
It was the largest scale collusion the NFL has ever seen.
Terrible. Fucking terrible. He won another MVP and nobody was interested. You know, the Falcons could have saved a lot of heart. Lamar on that Falcons team, they're in the playoffs 100% last year.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't Lamar
not even close?
Isn't Lamar and Michael Penix the same age?
Probably.
They're close. Lamar's like 25. I think
Penix might as well be my age.
Yeah,
like
Penix
Michael
is.
Penix.
I do too. I think Penix will have an okay
McCarthy. I have him above McCarthy.
I think that's a reasonable evaluation. So much of this is environment.
One of the things about the quarterbacks that I always look at is I look at the playmaking ability.
Are you able to, can you make plays? Not just with your legs. Can you run out of the pocket? Can you escape things, go off script? Can you make that throw down the field? I can see it with Penix. I'll say this. My reaction, if they would have taken Michael Penix at 6, would have been a lot better than if they would have taken J.J. McCarthy at 6.
100%. Penix, I could at least delude myself a little bit. McCarthy,
my only concern is his knees. But I think Penix is... There is a lot to like there, but
let's be excited about the draft for 5 minutes. Because
I'm absolutely done with this talk about the quarterbacks, man.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
because they got good guys. You know, we were all genuinely excited. Newbin is going to be a day one starter.
But I have a thing about Tyler Newbin. Help me out with this, guys. I like Tyler Newbin, the prospect. I actually think that. So I read up on him a little bit with Minnesota. I actually think like this is one of those like. Leadership, like leader guys, like a year or two from now, I won't be surprised if he has a C on his chest and is like breaking the huddle before the game. Like, I think this is he has strong leadership qualities, a great locker room guy, and is a really good player too. I just don't understand this whole concept of, and I put out a tweet and I sort of called the draft the day 2 and 3 underwhelming. And maybe that was not the right word, but it just left me scratching my head because, again, I like Tyler Newbin. I just spoke about the leadership stuff, but we didn't want to pay Xavier McKinney. But then we use, because the positional value thing, but then we use a 47th pick on a safety who might be good just like McKinney was. And I get it. The pushback is going to be, well, one guy was $17 million. The 47th pick in terms of value is also worth, to me, the equivalent of that long-term deal that McKinney got, right? Like, if I were to tell you to put a dollar amount on the second-round pick, like, just... Let me just give you a hypothetical. Let's
that
see
doesn't
do
work
this.
Because every position has such different prices.
No, take away the position. Let's look at the pick. If a team were to come to the Giants and say, I will give you X amount of dollars from my salary cap space for the number 47 pick, what's that dollar amount that you would then take the pick? Or do you think the Giants...
I mean, that dollar amount is defined. It's roughly like $9 million over 4 years.
You're looking at the rookie scale. I'm talking about if a
That's why they did it.
But they used the pick because they needed a starter, Weiss. That's the argument.
So we drafted a guy that's only going to be a 4-year starter, and then we're not going to pay him.
It depends.
Who knows?
It depends.
I don't know, man. It just seems like I'm confused with the whole position of value thing. I understand.
You can make that argument about every single position, though. Like, you're going to draft a quarterback and then pay him $80 million.
No. Because again, the quarterback position and the safety position, in terms of value, are completely different. If they would have drafted,
that's why you don't pay them $17 million.
No, but then you use the 47th pick on him.
Yeah, to get 4 years as a non-premium position, cost effectively.
What would you have liked them to take in position-wise in the second round if it wasn't a safety then? A corner? Would you have preferred corner 2 and then safety round 3? Because
I would have liked to make an investment in your offensive line there. But
they've made plenty.
I agree.
They brought in the 3 free agents. If they didn't bring in 3 free agents, they would have definitely drafted a guy.
I would have loved to move down. I would love to take an interior defensive lineman. I just think it's just weird how. Again, I understand cost control. I understand, be honest, guys. Your excitement with Xavier McKinney on 2020 and draft night, is it the same as what it was Tyler Newbin when he was drafted 47?
I had a little bit more familiarity with McKinney because he played at Alabama.
Me too.
Yeah,
exactly. So, okay, I'm excited a guy that we got for 4 years that maybe he might be great, but I'm expecting him to be good, really good. Kind of like what McKinney was, minus the ATV stuff and maybe the leadership stuff. I give him the edge. But
so if you think that he's going to be on par with Xavier McKinney by year, and they got him for significantly cheaper, and you just admitted that his leadership qualities potentially.
McKinney was far, a leader at Alabama too. Like Nick Saban.
He was, but he wasn't, because McKinney had some clown comments, and McKinney took his bye week to break his hand on his ATV. 100%. And you know, the worst I hope we're getting from Tyler Newbin is that he went on a yacht.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, of course. So, I don't.
He wasn't.
I'm not understanding where you're coming from.
What I'm coming from is, again, you value the position enough to use the 47th pick on it, but you don't value the position enough to give somebody a second contract.
Because you need the cap space.
But I think that value is also perfect.
You're looking at Tyler Newbin as a continuation from Xavier McKinney. I'm not looking at it like that in terms of production. I'm looking at it like you have a hole on your roster, right? But you do not value the position of value of that position that you have a hole on. The 47th pick is greater than that. Why do you think that, Weiss? Well, McKinney was a really good player, and they chose not to pay him. I think $17
million. No. McKinney was a good player. Not a really good player. Not a great player. We're doing semantics.
Now we're doing semantics. Okay, he was a
good player. You're just wildly overthinking this.
Maybe I am. I just think that.
You are. They let the guy go because he was going to get $17 million a year in free agency. They brought in someone who they scouted heavily and believe that can come in, be a day one starter who has good leadership qualities and can do a comparable job to the guy making $17 million, and it only cost them the 47th pick.
But you're looking at a continuation thing. I don't look at it as a continuation thing. I look at it as how much do you value the position versus the investments that you make on it?
I think you have your answer. They don't value it at $17 million, but they value it at 47.
But I value the 47th pick more than I value the
contract. Okay, so you disagree with the GM is what you're saying. It's not a confusion thing. You just disagree with the use of the pick.
But they need a starter, Weiss. That's the thing here. You can't expect a third round, a fourth round, a fifth round pick to be your day one starting safety.
100%. But I also think that they, again, if you don't value the position, then you're not going to invest $17 million a year. Then you also shouldn't value the position enough to invest the 47th pick in. How do you feel that need? You feel that need by going out and going to those second tier guys.
Okay, but those second tier guys are going to cost the exact same as what Newbin's going to be making. And if Newbin winds up being better than them, then you extend him.
I don't know if they're going to extend him based on.
Well, you got to remember, if McKinney doesn't break his wrist, there's a good chance they extend him because they were talking contract extension before he broke his wrist on that vacation.
Yeah, a lot of that was semantics. I don't think they were there. I don't know.
It would have made sense. It would have made sense based on the environment, but the context changed. He broke his wrist.
What it boils down to is there's plenty of positions around the league where unless you are the stud of the studs, a consistent all-pro, pro bowler, like on a get your number retired, maybe be in the Hall of Fame type level, teams are going to just draft your replacements or wait for your market value to drop. You know, 100%. Like unless you're Ed Reed, like I'm not giving you that type of money.
So the two guys that went after Tyler Newbin was Mason Smith, LSU, Chris Jenkins, Michigan. Then there was the Michigan corner, Mike Sandstrill, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Zach Frazier, Donnie Mitchell, Ben Sinat, Michael Hall Jr., Patrick Paul. And then you go down the list. I don't know, guys. We'll see. Newbin, I think, is going to end up being a big fan favorite. We're all going to forget about this, but that's whatever. The third round pick, Drew Phillips.
That one's confusing. And that one's confusing because what? Andre Phillips spent a lot of time with him, was very excited about the pick. Another guy that I saw the fans being like, But the guys who make their living analyzing the draft were like, great pick. So I have no idea. I have no idea what to make of that.
I would have taken Cooper Beebe. The value was just too great there.
Oh,
he's a slot guy.
They needed it. Slot corner's been a hole for 4 years now, 5 years now.
They've made the investments. Ethan just said, "Oh, well, they invested so much in their offensive line." Well, you want me to pull up? I got the list right here of corners they invested in.
Yeah, at what round?
But corner's important. Corner's very important, especially considering the uncertainty they have at the position other than Banks. I mean.
DBs.
And you need more corners. You know, you play three corners at a time now, at least, if not four. So you definitely
You play five linemen.
Yeah, but the tackle guard center is different. You know, you need at least
Cordell Flott, 81st overall. Dane Belton, 114. Deontay Banks, 25th. Trey Hawkins. I mean, I get
okay. So you just listed one first round pick, and he was 25th overall. You listed a third, a fourth, and a seventh.
A first, which by the way, they traded up to get a third. I think Trey Hawkins was a sixth. Belton, which is a safety, but against the DB room, 114. Tyler Newbin and Drew Phillips.
Again, like those are all
seven
with the exception of Banks
and Flott. Flott 81. Flott. I expect to play, but yeah.
Like these are depth picks.
Because you need six corners on game day, seven corners on game day. So you need bodies, too, when you're taking those guys at the end of drafts and hoping you can mold a tool and hope one of the traits they have.
But also clearly the staffs thought the value was there.
Yeah.
Like, let's not get it twisted. Like we're talking about value as it pertains to them skipping over McCarthy. Like, I think this administration has been fairly consistent with picking guys where they value them and not reaching for need.
Administration. I love that you call them the administration.
It's the Shane administration.
I thought about this. I wanted to ask you guys this. What about the late round guys? Tyrone Tracy. All right. Next Alvin Kamara.
Potentially.
That's what I love to hear.
I mean, he's the only one that I'm excited about.
I'm excited about Johnson, but he's a
fun. I'm way more excited about Tyrone Tracy than I was about Eric Gray.
Running back one?
No.
By November, it would not shock me.
Wow. Okay. Like that. Theo Johnson.
I'm excited. I watched a lot of him at Penn State. He's a good receiver. He had the most catches in Penn State's offense. He's an okay blocker. He needs to get better as a blocker. But if they're going to run a lot of two tight end, him and Bellinger are pretty interchangeable in terms of size, movement, and reception ability. So I think that will open up things for them if they want to come out in 12 and they want to run the ball. I think that's the, and frankly, you know, Waller's not coming back. I'm operating under the assumption
he's done.
So they needed to draft a tight end. Where they got him, I like. There were other tight ends I was interested in this draft, but Johnson has a track record of making plays as a receptions tight end. You can line him up in the slot if you need to. He's got enough ability, athleticism-wise, to play in the slot if you want to move things around. But they need the body. He has a track record at playing reasonably well against good opponents. You go watch the tape against Auburn 3 years ago, against Michigan last year. This is a good player. And where they got him is commiserate with where you would want to take a mid-round tight end. He needs to be a better blocker, but they also brought in a blocking tight end. So, you know, they've got, this is a clear need. I think if you get him to a second contract, everybody's happy because he won't be that expensive, but he has enough upside that he's a solid player.
Can I ask you guys what you guys consider a day three pick to be? Like, what is a successful day three pick?
Roster successful player.
Day three pick is someone that,
as long as they don't get cut within the first 2-3 years, that's a success.
Yeah, like realistically, someone that can be a solid depth for the duration of their rookie deal.
What do you consider a good day two, three pick?
Day two pick's a starter. If a day two pick becomes a starter, that's a good pick. An okay pick is someone.
Well, no. I would say the assumption is that a day two pick is a starter. A good day two pick is a starter that earns a second contract.
Fair. Yeah, that's
would
better.
Would you guys call Azeez Ojulari a good day two pick?
No.
Xavier McKinney.
He's fine. Xavier McKinney, yeah. McKinney's a good day two pick. Above average player at his position.
Gotcha. Wanted to also talk about, and I don't know shit about that UCLA linebacker that they took.
Me neither.
I really pretend like I know.
No. All right. Winners and losers from the Giants of the 2024 draft. Ethan, who would you say any, and let's do three winners and three losers, right?
All right. Put me on the spot, but all right.
Ethan, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who is one of the three biggest winners from the Giants 2024 draft?
Evan Neal.
Evan Neal is a big winner. Why?
They didn't draft any offensive linemen. They brought in the new offensive line coach. I don't want to say specifically for him, but
mostly
to really see if they could fix him and make him competent, and whether that be at guard or tackle. But clearly the opportunity for him is still there to compete for a starting job. He's got some free agent competition, but the fact that they didn't draft anyone, I mean, they didn't draft anyone with a high pick, let alone draft anyone. I think that bodes well for him. And I would consider that a big win for Evan Neal. You want me to just rattle them off, or are we going around the horn?
No, you did one. So now Nick gets to do one.
Okay.
Whichever of Jones or Drew Lock ends up being the starter in the fall, because they have no business being a starter in the NFL this fall, but because they didn't draft somebody, they will by default. Whether or not they actually play Jones because of the injury guarantees, that's a different conversation. You know, the post you've brought up, the June 1st cut, that could be in play as well, maybe for Jones. But anytime you don't draft a quarterback and you're a mediocre quarterback or a bad quarterback and you get more playing time, Daniel Jones is going to hold a clipboard in this league for a long time. Drew Lock is already on that path. This is a good way to make sure you have that happen. You be a good soldier. You play on a bad team. That way, when a good team offers you the clipboard, you get to smile and look good in shorts.
Yep.
Yeah, Daniel now gets another opportunity, and, you know, they drafted a really good receiver. I'm going to go with DJ Davidson and Jordan Riley.
Yep.
I don't think it was a vote of confidence for Daniel Jones when they didn't draft the quarterback. I don't even think it's a vote of confidence for Evan Neal that they didn't draft the tackle, because they did sign the Raiders offensive lineman too. So I think for Davidson and Jordan Riley, huge vote of confidence. The fact that they didn't draft the defensive lineman at all pretty much shows me that those two guys are going to be on the roster, and I think they're going to have significant roles. Who plays more is going to be determined, but I think Riley and Davidson have a good shot to play meaningful snaps. And I think it was a vote of confidence for them that they did not draft a defensive lineman. Let's go to losers. Ethan.
I got one more winner. We'll do bonus winner.
Go ahead.
Jalin Hyatt.
Okay.
I think Jalin Hyatt's a big winner, because Darius Slayton is a quality wide receiver three. Okay. Nothing more than that.
Not even a low end wide receiver two.
No, I think he's a quality wide receiver three. And you bring in Malik Nabers to be your wide receiver one. You draft Theo Johnson, and hopefully, I mean, he's one of the most athletic tight ends in the draft, that he can develop into a good pass catcher, and really opens things up for Jalin Hyatt to be able to make plays downfield. So I think, yeah, the quarterback situation's not great, but being able to open up at receiver, I think that bodes well for Jalin Hyatt.
I'm going to go first this time because I know one of you guys are going to steal my loser.
Go ahead.
Loser is Darius Slayton and Isaiah Hodgins for two separate reasons. Yep. Isaiah Hodgins now is very much on the roster bubble. You better be able to play special teams, my friend, because if you cannot, I have a tough time. Because right now, you look at the Giants depth chart for receiver, Malik Nabers, Jalin Hyatt, Wanda Robinson, Darius Slayton. So you're talking about your fourth or fifth best receiver. That motherfucker better be able to play special teams, right? You can't play specials, they might not have a spot for you. So I would say Hodgins there, and Darius Slayton, who I might be holding out. I don't know what he's doing. If and when he's on the roster, I don't think he'll be able to put up the numbers that he's put in the past, which could then impact his ability going into free agency next year if he's not getting the volume that he got his first 4 years. So that is my loser. Which one do you guys want to go next?
Nick, you can go.
I'll say flop by default because they drafted another slot corner, and flop they've given the benefit of the doubt to for the last two seasons. And flop was a lot better 2 years ago than he was last year. But
they also brought back Darnay Holmes too. Sorry to cut you
that off. Too. Yeah, there's a bubble there. I mean, you ideally, if you're drafting a guy who's a slot corner, you don't want to have to play him outside. They've got three slot corners arguably on this roster right now.
And Darnay can play special teams.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, when we're talking about the fringes of the roster, you got to have something. And I'm really curious to see who ends up being their main special teams guy with the new kickoff rules. I wonder if it's Tracy. I wonder if they consider playing someone like Nabers there, because the rules are going to be different and it's going to incentivize you to use your skill players. You saw quite a few teams draft corners and safeties who were really good on special teams in college a little bit earlier than they might have if the rule change didn't happen.
I don't have a loser. My only loser are the losers who were mad at Joe Shane.
I knew he was going to say that.
That was very Trump.
It was very.
The haters and the losers.
Yeah.
That was very.
The
very
losers, of which there are many.
Yes. All right. Let's wrap it up. Been an hour. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. See you guys whenever we feel like it.
Peace.